This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, I'm joined by my buddy Ryan, and we talk the top 10 of the shitty 90s, part 2, 97 to 99. Now, there ain't a ton to pick from when it comes to the late 90s, but we found some cool ones, and we discuss it all. Check it out.
All right, Ryan. It's hard to even welcome you to the 80s Glam Metal Cast because you're just an old friend that pops in all the time. So I'm not even going to welcome you.
Don't need it. Love being here. It's all good.
So I got to tell you something kind of funny. So yeah. Today we had planned to finish up our 90s episode, and we did this originally. We did half of the late 90s in November, okay? So tonight we're going to cover 97 and 99. So don't I get an email today from Anchor, okay, which is my podcast platform. And they told me that there is some, basically, they call it third-party material on the episode, the other one we did. Was it 94 to 96?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, 94. There we go. Okay, so 94 to 96. And which was crazy is that, like, okay, why all of a sudden is this happening? Strangely enough, the day that we're going to actually record the final part of it. So
yeah.
For some reason, the Bon Jovi, What It Takes, and Queen, I Was Born to Love You, need to be removed from this episode. So as we speak, that episode on the podcast platform is down. I'm going to cut that out.
No.
You know, people find out, man, all the big bucks that I'm making on the podcast. This is what happens, you know.
Damn, well, that's crazy. Of all bands, I thought it'd be the AC/DC police.
So I don't know. I don't understand this stuff, but you know, if it's gonna burn somebody's ass out there so bad, I'll cut it out and put it back up. I'll repost it without it. It is what it is. Hey, I was trying to promote them, man.
I was
giving their songs out to people in Russia and Singapore. They don't want that kind of promo. Screw them.
I don't think those camps can afford it. That's what the deal is. They can't afford free itself. So.
That's right. That's right. All right, so I think what we had said last time is that, you know, as we got farther along in the 90s, it was just kind of getting to be slim pickings of things that we could go through. And honestly, I've been kind of avoiding doing this episode because I feel like this was some of the worst albums out there. They're not bad, but there wasn't as many to pick from.
No, there wasn't as many. I kind of drudged some up at the end here, but I got some that I actually booted off into my honorable mention list, which you're going to probably be a little bit shocked at the ones that I replaced them for. But I found some pretty good stuff at the end here because, originally I must agree, I got 10 in there, and I thought, okay, that's probably the 10 that, you know, most people would think about or remember. And same with your list, I'd assume. And then I kind of revisited it and said, wait a minute, there might be some sleepers in there, so I think I got a few surprises.
Nice. All right, well, I'm ready. I don't know if I can put any musical tracks in around our songs. Maybe we'll just have to sing a song before.
Yeah, perfect.
But so what's your number 10, man?
All right, well, you know what? I got to break the rules a little bit, just a slight change, just a quick shout-out. I'm going to go ahead. A number 10.5, okay?
Oh, it's an honorable
mention, but it's something that you'll get it in a minute here. So, I got the song Bitter Pill off the Motley Best Of, okay?
Ooh, yeah.
And the reason I give it a 10.5 is because I can't put a Best Of on here, but I really like that song Bitter Pill.
Me too.
And so, I got to give a quick shout out to that song. I saw that tour, and it was the original band, and it's actually the first Motley show I ever saw. It was either in late 98 or 99, and it was at a junior college here in the Bay Area. And, you know, they were just kind of picking up again after Generation Swine, and they started getting back to that cool sound. But I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the song Bitter Pill off the Motley Greatest Hits with that cool artwork on the cover. So that's it. I won't say anything else. That's my 10.5 on that.
Okay. It's such a great song. I'll allow it.
Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, but my real number 10.
A restless heart. A restless mind. I'm tired of wasting.
I got Whitesnake, Restless Heart. So this is one of those that... It was supposed to be a Coverdale solo album, and the record company convinced him to call it Whitesnake for, you know, financial reasons, of course, and that's fine. It's much more toned down than Whitesnake. Let's just call it 87 and Slip of the Tongue. You don't have nearly any of the upper register Coverdale. You have some of it. It kind of, you know, he goes up there in some choruses a little bit, but not nothing from the Bad Boys or Kitten Got Claws days. That upper register is kind of taking a back seat. But still a cool album. It's got some, like, you know, very upbeat, adult bluesy stuff, you know. It's a lot more Coverdale Page than in mid-80s, late-80s Whitesnake, but I still like it. The song Can't Go On is basically the song Your Time Is Gonna Come by Led Zeppelin. If you sing the Led Zeppelin chorus of Your Time Is Gonna Come when he says Can't Go On in the chorus, it is identical, which is kind of funny, but I like it still. But yeah, it's just a much more mature Whitesnake, but I still dig it.
Funny that you brought that one up, because I don't know, I've got this on like a burnt CD somewhere, and it made its way into the car, and I want to say a couple weeks back I was listening to this album, and yeah, it's not bad, it's a cool listen, but yeah, I don't think the great songwriting that he's known for is there. It's a lot more low key type of stuff, and like you said, and even with his vocals, he's singing in a lower register. But that song Restless Heart, man, that's a pretty good song, the title track, and there's some other ones that I can't really remember the names of them, but it's a good listen. It's just one of those ones where nothing really super stands out to me, but you could sit and put it on and just, you know, kind of chill with it. It's like, yeah, it's a good listen.
Yeah, he's starting to go into those, you know how he kind of growls on stage now? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what he did in Coverdale Page. He combined it with that killer Coverdale upper register, but he kind of just growls now, which is okay. It doesn't really fool us because we're such good big fans, but this is the beginning of all that. But yeah, I'd give it a shot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. And you actually get Adrian Vandenberg, because really you never had Adrian Vandenberg on an album before. Because
isn't that crazy? Yeah,
hurt his wrist or whatever. So yeah, it's kind of weird. All right. Well, my number 10. You know, it's like going back to the well, man. All right, it's the same old shit, same band, different year. But I gotta give "Facing the Animal" by Yngwie some love. I think Mats Levin has a great voice. I love the song "Alone in Paradise," and I kind of went back because I interviewed him a while back, and he told me a certain song was left over, or parts of it were left over from the Odyssey era, and I couldn't remember what song that actually was. So I had to go back and read one of my own interviews that I did, and it was "Alone in Paradise." That's a very cool song. And this has got Cozy Powell on drums. Production is great. I think it's Chris Sangridis produced it. So he just did an amazing job. It's got like really sharp, updated production. He's on a major label again. I love the title track, "Facing the Animal." That's so good. "Another Time." Then you get a track like "Heathens from the North," which kind of reminds you of like that old school, like, you know, Viking Yngwie. And of course, you gotta have a power ballad. You got "Like an Angel," and I think there might be one other power ballad. But I'm not saying every song is like blows me away, but it's a pretty good album, man. A pretty good showing for Yngwie.
Yep, I gotta remain quiet on this one.
Oh,
it's gonna up here.
Okay, all right, number 9.
All right, number 9, speaking of broken record, here I am talking about Y&T again, my local Bay Area boys. We got Endangered Species from 98. This one is much like their comeback in 96, the album Musically Incorrect. But this album's kind of like a more of a 70s hard rocker, but in a less Hendrix way, a little bit less blues. It's kind of straightforward. You got the classic Y&T 10 lineup with DeGrasso and Steph Burns in there. I'd say this is much more of a consistent newer album than Musically Incorrect. You got songs called Black Gold and God Only Knows that could have perfectly fit perfectly on their 1990 album 10. Sail On By is a great mid-tempo, but I think it was a solid product that could you know, if it had a little bit more of like the Contagious production, it would be right up there next to all the rest of them. So I kind of ignored it when it came out, and ignored it for the most part just because I like classic 80s and early 90s Y&T, but I really like it now. So I'm glad I got back into it. So I definitely want to check out Endangered Species.
Nice. Well, my number nine, this was a band that I threw on one of our 2000s episodes, and this was the album that really I heard first that it got me into this band. Ice, Earth, Something Wicked, This Way Comes. Great album.
Nice.
I don't really want to talk. I don't care about the political crap. I don't care about what he did or whatever. It doesn't matter. Good music is good music. I still like to go back to this album and check it out. First track, Burning Times. It's got a great groove, heavy song, sick vocals. And this does not have Tim Ripper. That was the album that we talked about, The Glorious Burden,
right,
of Tim Ripper owns. This has Matt Barlow, and I think Matt Barlow has a great voice. It's such an interesting voice. It's like if you mixed Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, James Hetfield, and Jeff T. all into like one voice. I love all those people that we just mentioned. So I love his voice. And if you go back to their album Tribute to the Gods, and I think, you know, maybe I could have used that during this time, you know, for this kind of a list, because I think that came out in the late 90s. But he does God of Thunder, and he does Creatures of the Night. So he does a Paul song, and he does a Gene song. And he just nails it, because he's just something, you know, I know he's inspired by those guys, and he has that inside of him. There's just one song, it's called Melancholy, and it's like a metal power ballad type of a thing. Definitely has a Jeff Tate thing going on. Iced Earth has some Iron Maiden elements in there with the guitar, mm-hmm, like the dual lead stuff and everything like that. But I think, and this album's all over the place. There's some like acoustical type stuff that reminds me of that Alice in Chains could do. There's some heavy stuff that sounds like it could be Testament. But probably my favorite song by them, and I sent this to you, is Watching Over Me. I just think that is such a cool track. I mean, it's really heartfelt. You know, it's about losing a friend, and then that friend kind of watch it over you as like your guardian angel.
Yeah.
And I just think that's, you know, sometimes you don't get a lot of good depth in metal songs. Sometimes they come across as corny or not very emotional. But I think that song is so good. I actually think that song could have been a hit if it was done by somebody else, especially who you know, like a band that would have been big at that time, you know. Maybe more of like an alternative band or a modern rock band or something like that. But yeah, man, I got to give this album some props. I think every song is good. You know, I went through and I scanned through it last night just to try to refresh my memory, but I think every song's great, and I recommend this if people haven't heard it.
Yeah, man, I did my homework. I checked that song out, and then I went back and I did some research, and I was thinking, damn, I didn't realize they were around for as long as they had been, because
yeah,
this is like their like third album or something like that.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but it's several down the line, and I didn't realize that they had anything prior to like 95 or something. But I really am getting more and more into this band, and it's funny you mentioned that vocalist and all those other vocalist comparisons, because he does have a very interesting voice. It's like it's a very thick voice, but he has the range.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a cool voice, and I had to look up who it was. I didn't remember who it was, and I'm going to have to kind of dig deep into that guy's solo or whatever, what else he's done, because
yeah,
I really liked his voice as well.
Well, strangely enough, he became a cop. He got out of music and he became a cop. But I think he's done.
Wow.
He's come back to Iced Earth like for studio albums here and there. And he's also done like, you know, like people hire him to sing on, you know, like power metal albums and stuff. So he's done some stuff. But as far as I know, he's a cop. So interesting.
Damn. That's crazy.
Yeah. All right, man. Number eight.
Okay, we're entering the how can this be a 90s album and who the hell are they group. So I got three in a row that you're going to be like, wait, what? So, number eight. So take a walk on the wild side. Give me the kick to your heart. I got a band called Restless, and the album's called Alone in the Dark. So this is Bon Jovi meets Journey-influenced singer. They got a big keyboard influence and that crunchy guitar. And the singer's got one of those styles of voices where as the notes go higher, he gets ballsier, almost like a Janie Lane when, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
His voice almost gets deeper when they get more intense. It's cool. So, he's obviously laced with some of the more softer things on this album, the mid-tempos, a few ballads, but when he gets going, he really has a great voice. But if you want a taste of what I'm talking about here, search it on YouTube. I don't think it's on Spotify. It's pretty out there in terms of like rarity, but a song called Leaving You or You Keep the Fire Burning. But I like this CD so much, and I say CD because I bought it twice. I found it, I think I was in Lake Tahoe, and I found it in a used record store. And then I saw it again. I said, oh, I got to get this one again. So I have two of them. But, and this so begins my random who the hell are they bands portion of the podcast. But Restless, Alone in the Dark. Check it out.
Nice. I've never heard of them. But I think I'm glad that you're throwing some kind of, more no-name type of bands, because people like that kind of stuff. They like to discover something new. So you're doing people a good service. And I got to just say, I don't know if this is going to, translate well to when it comes out on all the platforms. But, I mean, we're using some different equipment here, and like, your voice, it almost feels like I'm talking to somebody I've never talked to before, because your voice sounds way different than it usually does. So it's kind of, like, just freaking me out.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Huh. Who are you?
Shit, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let me gargle with Jack.
Okay. So, number 8. She was promised a far and only step on only to later. Well, a pair of beauty, pretty, a pair of voices still you. I'm going to my usual bag of tricks with Wake of Magellan by Sabotage. I'm never going to come out and say this is one of my favorite Sabotage albums. I'm going to say that would be Edge of Thorns. But I think this is pretty good effort. We've got a lot of... The cool thing with this album is that, and I think Dead Winter Dead did this a little bit too, is that John Oliva is singing lead on certain tracks. So we got some tracks are Zach Stevens, some tracks are John Oliva. And I do enjoy the differences. One song that really stands out is Turns to Me, Another Way. I think Another Way is sung by John. John's voice, he just needed that break, I think. He needed a couple years off because his voice just sounds killer. Blackjack Guillotine, mm-hmm. Paragons of Innocence is another one John sings. Really good. The title track's really epic. Does all that voice stuff like they did with Chance on the Handful of Rain album. You got a lot of great musicianship on here. You got Al Petrelli, Chris Caffery, Jeff Plate on the drums. Now, this is a concept album, okay? Go to Wikipedia, because sometimes concepts, they're hard to follow, and it doesn't get any more hard to follow than this one, because it's almost like there's multiple stories going on. So I don't really understand the story. It's way over my head, but go on Wikipedia if you want to know what it's about. There's some, some political stuff, and somebody got thrown overboard of a ship, but then they're trying to throw in elements of like the past with Magellan. So there's almost like three story arcs to this thing that is trying to tell one story. So I don't know if it works. I don't know if it really matters, but the music the music sounds cool. It's the last album of Sabotage to feature Zach Stevens, which is kind of a disappointment because I really like Zach Stevens. But
yeah,
pretty cool era for Sabotage, another solid effort. So, yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, I dug it into this album when I got into my Sabotage phase. Like I told you before, it kicked off with Hollow Mountain King, and I fell in love with that one, and then I got all the shit. So it's been a while since I've listened to it. Did they alter the logo on this album? If I recall, I think it's not the same Killer Sabotage logo that pissed me off.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was really turned off by the album cover and the logo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, me too. I got it.
Didn't like it. I thought this was on CMC Records when I saw that album cover, but it was actually Atlantic. So, All right.
The Kiss of Death.
I think we got some of those coming, I think. CMC. All right. All right. So number seven, this is going to be another unknown band. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. So this one's called Big Bad Wolf. It was released in 98. And so this features Craig Chiquico, the guitarist, lead guitarist from Starship. So he was in Starship from the mid-70s up through my absolute favorite Starship album called Love Amongst the Cannibals.
Yeah.
If you never heard that one, I know we're at, you know, a metal podcast here, but it's freaking good, dude. It's like Mutt Lange produced a song, and it's got some like kind of hard rockers on there. So if everybody wants to check that one out.
Wait, is that the album that has It's Not Enough?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, my wife plays that song. I can hear where they're going for the 80s hard rock thing. And I got to give you props, man. That guitar player, he was like the coolest looking dude in the band. And he was always in magazines. He was promoting Carvin amps or something, right? Carvin?
Or you nailed it. Dude, my next line of my notes was, Craig always had the 80s hairband look in the 80s with Starship.
Yeah.
But killer. So, yeah, he was regarded as kind of the ripper in the group. But, you know, in Duran Duran and in Huey Lewis, you got those sneaky good guitarists that freaking rip. And, like, because they're in a pop band, they're overshadowed and no one really gives a shit. But they're killer. So, anyway, I digress. So, this guy, you know, Craig Chiquico, he's got a ton of, like, acoustic stuff and jazz stuff and all this 70s Starship stuff. So you kind of don't expect this out of him, but even the album cover has like big haired dudes on it, and he was never like that, other than like, you know, or his bands were never like that. He was, his bands weren't. So between, you know, the previous choice and Restless and my next choice, what I'll talk about, I swear these had to be on the shelf since 91. Like they're freaking so early 90s, like melodic hard rock. They're great. But just to get a taste, search the song Midnight Angel. It's huge chorus, very Def Leppard-y, high voices, big background, huge choruses. It's awesome. But I think they must have recorded this in like 91 or 2. Like, there's no way they could have recorded this in 98 and looked the way they looked and sounded the way they sound. But they're definitely carrying on that Mutt Lange sound from Love Amongst. And, dude, I love it. It's tough to find. You got to kind of find it on YouTube. I don't even own the CD. I don't even remember how I found this thing, but I've listened to this CD or this album a lot, but it's always been online. So yeah, Big Bad Wolf, 1998.
I love it, man. You are educating the masses. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Number seven. I don't even know why I've got this album rated this high. I think it's because who it is, but I'm just going to spit it out. Kiss, Psycho Circus.
Yep, I remember it. I remember when it came out.
Yeah, you know, I was so hyped. You know, I feel like I've talked about this album numerous times, you know, throughout my days of podcasting, but I was very excited about this album. It was going to be the reunion album with the original guys and so much momentum after the reunion tour, but this really fell flat. It did not work. It starts off really strong. The title track is great. Psycho Circus is a great song. Paul's got I Pledge Allegiance to the State of Rock and Roll. Also a pretty cool song. Almost sounds like it could be on Revenge or something like that. At least the chorus does. Into the Void is Ace's track. Also a decent track. That's actually the only track that has all the original guys playing on it. You know, they pulled a lot of ghost shit. Tommy Thayer, Bruce Kulick. Kevin Valentine plays drums on the rest of the album. So a lot of shady shit. Isn't bad. It's a heavier Gene song. It sounds kind of grungy. I think it was a leftover from Carnival of Souls. But I think as the album progresses, you get some of their worst tracks. Like these are some of my least favorite. That's why I'm almost wondering, like, this should have been 10. But, you know, it's Kiss. So, but anyways, there's certain songs, like people who know have this album, like You Wanted the Best is one of the songs. Like, they just wrote a song that was based on their tagline, you know, for their live shows, and the song completely blows. Raise Your Glasses is another song that completely blows. It sounds like it's a commercial for like Wheaties or something like that. It's so cheesy. And then there's, of course, Peter has to have a ballad. They do, what the hell is this ballad? I Finally Found My Way or something like that. And once again, it's what the problem is you can kind of see where I'm going with it. They just tried too hard to like make the next Destroyer or something like that. Like Peter's got to have the ballad, and this has got to be that. So they tried to structure this thing like Destroyer, and they failed miserably. They should have just did something raw, went back to their roots. It didn't matter. I mean, I don't know what they thought they were going to get a hit album in 1998. It did go gold because they just have a lot of fans. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was a moderate success. I don't think there's very many fans that look back at this as some, great achievement for Kiss. But, yeah, that's where I got it. So it's kind of like a mixed bag. It starts off pretty decent, and then it just kind of falls off and gets into some really bad territory for me. But, it's my favorite band. It's probably like you. If you liked one song out of Def Leppard or AC/DC, you'd probably still have it on your list, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, okay. Kind of. But so this was the quote-unquote original band, right? That's how they sold it or packaged it? Okay.
Yes, yep.
And what was the single? Was it Psycho Circus?
Yeah, Psycho Circus was the single, yep.
Yeah, because I remember this coming out, and we had a Bay Area radio station that played the shit out of it, and they were so pumped for it. And I remember this on the radio quite a bit, and it was to me like pretty status quo for a Kiss song, never being like a huge Kiss guy. But I remember it kind of fading quickly.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I mean, I thought the song Psycho Circus was pretty good, actually. I liked it.
They didn't have another. I want to say they did release that song that I told you I couldn't stand. You Wanted the Best. I think that, and that just fell completely flat. They didn't really have another really strong single. You know what I mean?
I see.
Like I said, whatever happened, the label maybe didn't push too much more with it, and it just kind of died.
Yeah. Well, I remember it, and it kind of stuck with me a little bit. So I dig that song. I just haven't delved into the album.
Yeah, don't waste your time.
Right. I got it.
All right. Number six.
Number six, okay, the final, and this is my number one choice of the three randoms. It's a band called Velocity. So the album's called Impact, and it's from 97. So the singer's name is David Victor. He's actually a current member of Boston, and he did the rock star movie path to get into boxing Boston with his YouTube appearances. Oh. So, he's got this killer 91 solo album. It's really cool. It's similar to this. This album by Velocity is a little bit harder, more hard melodic rock, but his 91 album is what you'd expect if you heard this album Velocity. You'd expect a little catchier stuff from 91, but this guy's voice is absolutely top notch. It's almost like too good. You know those voices that are just like too good, where you're like, this guy's bugging me, it's too perfect. But it's like they're like a bigger, catchier, thicker, more melodic Trickster with the huge, like the hugest of the huge Def Leppard choruses mixed in. I was immediately hooked. I can't remember where I first found the CD, but I have the CD, and from the first note, I just thought, oh my God, this is good. And it just goes on and on from there. Pat Torpey from Mr. Big plays drums on this album. Some of the standouts, the first song is called You Don't Amaze Me. Riot going on, Julianne, Love is Dangerous, and More Than Tonight. They're really, really killer. I think they're Bay Area guys. I think this guy kind of like started out in the music business, went a different direction, and then came back to the music business once he had a little money in his pocket. So this one out of the three randoms, it's hard for me to say like, ignore Restless and Big Bad Wolf because don't. But Velocity is freaking awesome. I would definitely check it out. It's called Impact from 1997.
Cool, man. Never heard of that, but I will definitely check it out. So number six, this is a grand moment right here. This moment is going to make you proud. This is a moment you will never forget because this is the first time it's ever happened. I've got a Def Leppard album on my list. Number six.
Yeah.
Def Leppard.
All right.
Euphoria. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Boy. It's finally time. You've made it.
Finally made it. I've always professed, you know, people have questioned some of my musical choices, and I've always professed to be a musical metal misfit. You know what I mean? I don't follow any rules. I just like what I like. If I don't like Hysteria for some reason, that's just me. I'm weird, whatever. But I thought Euphoria was great. Now let's give it a little context. But okay, so let's put this into context. So I was kind of went a few years where there really wasn't a lot of music coming out that I was into, you know. So
yeah,
Def Leppard comes out and they make a pretty, you know, true to form 80s sounding album, and
yeah,
I was pretty impressed. You know, it kicks ass. It's kind of what we needed for us, you know, hair metal fans at that point. I think there's times where it's a little bit forced, but I think it works. Where I feel like Kiss forced it and it didn't work, I think Def Leppard kind of was really trying to get back to their, you know, their Hysteria phase, and it worked. I'm trying to look at my list here. I think my favorite song is Day After Day. You like that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yep.
I think that is so dramatic. It's got that old school Leppard kind of dramatic vibe. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a cool choice by you, man. Like, yeah. That's kind of a on the down low, that song. So
that's
that
deep,
means you really
that's
have
a deep track.
Into
but
this
that's my favorite yeah. track on the album. Paper Sun almost is kind of similar to Day After Day. They kind of uh-huh. remind me of each other. Demolition Man is a real cool opener. There's some weird goofy stuff, you know, 20th Century Girl, you know, it's okay. Yeah. Guilty's a cool ballad type of song, but obviously I just missed the song that needs to be mentioned out of all, was Promises. What a great single. Mm-hmm. What a great song. And for some reason I slacked on this list and I wasn't right in my years. This was 99, right?
Yes.
Okay. So great album. And unfortunately, they didn't keep the momentum going, right? With X, it was kind of like a fall off. They kind of got a little too light after this album.
Yeah.
But this was a great, you know, making the statement, getting back to what they're known for. And I like this album. And I can go back and jam on pretty much all the songs. Like I said, why I like this one and not other ones, who knows? It is what it is. But there we
yeah,
go,
that,
man.
That
Leppard finally made my – maybe someday AC/DC and Sammy Hagar will make my list. I doubt it. But there they are. There they are, my number six.
Well, again, I shall remain quiet. But I will agree with you on this. I am also a weirdo in my disdain or lack of – not disdain because they're okay. But same with me with Guns N' Roses. You know what I mean? Like, just like you with Def Leppard – 15 million people buying Hysteria and 15 million people buying Appetite for Destruction, and it just doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid. I know they're talented. I know they're awesome, and I know they're a fraction away from being right there in my favorite bands, but for some reason, they don't speak to me, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the problem is when you think something's okay, and then everybody in the world is just telling you it's amazing, then you
yeah.
like it even less, you know what I mean? So I think that's where the you know, like I think Guns N' Roses is just on par with like Warrant and LA Guns. I don't see how they're any better than any of those bands. And then when you come at
exactly.
me and say this is the greatest band ever, greatest rock and roll band ever, I'm just like no, not the greatest rock and roll band ever. And then I start to like them even, you know, I can't even deal with them even more because of what everybody's saying about them. So I think that's what it is. If they were just out there with everybody else on that same playing field, I might like them more. I still might have issues with certain parts of them, of what they do, but I might like them a little bit more. But it's that people just tell me how great it is when I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
It just makes it worse.
Boom. You nailed it.
Sorry. I had to go on a tangent. It happens in pretty much every episode, so.
That's okay.
Bye.
All All right, number five. I'm going back to Unruly Child from 1998. So, if you recall in the 92 episode, Unruly Child was up there. I preach that first album. That album is perfection. But this is a great follow-up to the 92 classic. You got Kelly Hansen, who replaced the amazing Mark Free on vocals. I still prefer Kelly in Hurricane, but it's a great stand-in for Mark Free. You got songs like Heart Run Free, Rise Up, very killer 80s, Do You Ever Think of Me, 80s AOR. It's just like laced with it. It definitely sounds like the first four or five songs were 92, 93 leftovers, but the rest is just pretty much killer, what you'd expect from a 1998 Unruly Child. So I would definitely check this album out. If there's any Hurricane fans out there or now Foreigner fans out there, really good album. It's, you know, he's still young, he's still delivering cool stuff from Kelly Hansen in 98 with Unruly Child.
Ooh, I'm going to have to check that out. I think I remember him doing something with Unruly Child, and maybe I have found these in my travels, but I don't remember much about it, and I'm a big Kelly Hansen fan, so yeah, I'm going to check
it out. Yeah, he's got one of those voices that's got no rasp, no falsetto, just smooth as can be, great range, and he does a great job on this album. Like, I couldn't think of any other singer I'd like to hear with this band, because I really like Mark Free. He's got a fantastic voice. And I love Kelly Hansen as well. So it was a really cool matchup for me.
Cool, man. All right, well, number five. Yeah. This is another thing that I usually don't do on any list that we ever do. Like, I do usually, if it's like a compilation or B-sides or leftovers, yeah. I usually don't ever touch albums like that. But since it's such slim pickings for this era of music, and since it's so good, and the sun that lights the day, colors fade into my eyes, but then they turn to gray. Oh, since when was love a crime? I gotta go with Fields of Yesterday by Lillian X.
And, all right, yeah, you're a killer album.
Yeah, it seems like we've talked about this album at some point.
I was seeking some advice at one point on this album, because you were talking about Psycho Schizophrenia, and I was like, is it anything like Fields of Yesterday?
Yes, okay, that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I thought that I knew when these songs, most of these songs were from. I could have swore that Steve Blaze told me this. So last night I went back and I listened to my, dude, I can't remember shit. So I went back and I listened to my interview where I asked him about this album, and strange enough, he doesn't actually answer. He kind of dodges it. I go, what era were the bulk of these tracks from? And he pretty much blows me off, and he goes on a tangent about how the members started to, there was a rift in the band, and I think it was aimed at like Ron Taylor and Darren DeLatte or whatever. So he never really answered. It's just basically, he said that they just always wrote too many songs, or he wrote too many songs, and then stuff just got cut. So if based on my own knowledge and ear, I want to say that the first part of the album sounds like these could be leftovers from any of like the first three or first two.
Yes.
And then as we get to the later part, I think these were tracks that probably didn't make it on Psycho Schizophrenia or were written even after Psycho Schizophrenia. So they didn't have any new music. It was basically they got this offer from a Japanese record label to put out something, but they didn't have anything except for these leftover tracks. But if there's anybody out there that's not familiar with this album, you really should go back and listen to it, especially if you like the first couple albums. And most people swear by Love and War. Like, that's most people's favorite. So if you like Love and War, you should definitely go back and check this out. A couple of my favorites I'll just mention is I love Do It. Twilight and Hell is such a great song. Crying Out Loud. There's a power ballad, When It Rains, It Pours. Pretty classic. And then there's another cool song. This has to be right around the Love and War era, called Blood on the Moon, because it just reminds me of like Letters in the Rain and all those kind of songs. So maybe it was too similar to some of those tracks, but go back, man. All the tracks have Ron Taylor and Steve Blaze doing their thing, and how some of them didn't make their albums, I don't know. But I always, and I even said to him, and I kissed his ass a little bit in the interview. I said, look, man, if this is your junk, then, you know, if this is your leftover crap, this is better than a lot of people's official albums that they put out. So, you know, they should be proud of the kind of stuff they write.
Dude, this is such a good album. The one that stands out the most to me is That's what you get for crying out loud.
See, we're just gonna have to sing the songs.
That one,
well, I don't think so Lillian good. Axel tried to come after me.
No, man, dude, that one, I love that song.
Yep.
This album, dude, to me, this album is. I almost put it before the first one. I wow. love the first one, but like, God, this one's so thick. Like, I've always preached She's My Salvation off Poetic Justice yeah. to you as being one of my favorite riffs of all time, or, you know, any band.
Yeah.
And so many of these songs are so similar to that, where it's like, really, this is cutting room floor stuff? Like, this yeah. is freaking amazing. I listen to this album a lot, so good call for putting this one on there, man. I totally forgot, because I was thinking, oh, it's kind of a demos, rare cuts, best of, whatever thing. Not a best of, you know what I mean, compilation.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, killer shout to this album. I love it. That's like, that's up there. I'm gonna kick off one of mine and just give you that one.
All right, number four.
All right, number four, I got Axel Rudi Pell, another one that has appeared in the past.
Yes.
But this one's called Oceans of Time. So if you want to get hooked on this album, just listen to the song Carousel. I mean, it's Johnny Gioli perfection. He kills it in this band. He's been the vocalist from 98 until now. And, you know, Gioli's got such a perfect voice. He's probably in my top three of voices of all time. He's as legit as he was in Hardline Double Eclipse or Brunette or Axel Rudi in the 90s and early 90s, late 80s, and he is now. I mean, he's still got a fantastic voice. I dig the Bob Rock and Jeff Scott Soto days at Axel Rudi, but I have such a soft spot for Gioli that, you know, I had to choose this one. So Living on the Wild Side kills it. You know, it's another song, get you hooked. But this guy has just got one of those discographies. It's kind of like Yngwie and Dio, where it's just a never-ending source of quality shit, and it never lets you down. So German guitar player Axel Rudi, he was in the German Stealer, and he has a huge catalog of albums, and they're all ripping, so check it out.
Nice. Okay, number four. Dokken, Erase the Slate, man. Sounds Ooh. Like Dokken is back. We had some kind of detours, dysfunctional, it isn't bad, but it's not really true Dokken. And then we get Shadow Life, which really sucks. I don't remember what any of it sounds like, and I don't want to remember it. So Erase the Slate, well, it kind of sucks we don't have George Lynch, but if we're going to have anybody, I'll take Reb Beach, man. He's a pretty kick-ass guitar player. And
absolutely.
I'm not saying that every song on this album is great, but the title track, Erase the Slate, kicks all kinds of ass. One of the coolest Dokken songs out there. I love Shattered.
Oh, yeah.
Voice of the Soul is one of my favorites. I think that's such a cool, got a really nice hook to it. And Change the World is good. Madness Hatter, I mean, I could go on all day. There's a lot of cool songs. But I think, you know, a couple bands like Dokken and Death Leopard were kind of understanding, like, okay, you know, we tried some different stuff. We, you know, it's all fine and dandy. We kind of alienated some of our classic fans. Let's get back to kind of what we're known for. So, yeah, that's a good one. That one's on CMC Records. It has kind of a shitty-looking album cover, which is standard for a CMC album. But, good, actually really good effort by these guys.
Well, full disclosure, had it on my list. And I kicked it off to the honorable mentions. And I don't know. I don't remember which album kicked it off. It was one of the three random ones that nobody cares about or knows about. But yeah, I mean, you got Reb on there. I love the title track. And it's kind of like the final time that Dawn was really killer to me.
Yes.
And I believe they released the, what's it called? Live from the Sun.
Yes.
Live album.
Yep.
During this tour. And it's also killer. Like, if you listen to him sing Kiss of Death, he's pretty much where he was when it was released. Like,
yeah.
He's still there. Mattis Tatter, and then the Mick Brown song, Crazy Mary Goes Round. I actually really like Mick's voice. Mm-hmm. It's a freaking cool song. That's one of my favorites off the album. You got some of that Beatles 70s, 60s, 70s shit on there, and it's just kind of bugs me. And frankly, I just kind of remember liking this album a lot more in 99 than I do in 2023. Yeah. So I was really happy when it came out, and I bought it new, and I was really into it. But in looking back, I thought, I'm going to kick it off.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you got it on there, though.
Yeah, but I'm glad you mentioned, because I forgot to mention that. But, yeah, I think this is the last time we hear his voice in pretty good form. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. You got to watch, there's a YouTube video of he and Reb doing, what's the hit off of Under Lock and Key?
In My Dreams?
In My Dreams. Jeez, I'm a terrible talking fan. They're doing it on a Japanese TV show, and Reb kind of screws it up because it kind of varies in the order of which he sings the In My Dreams chorus, and he and Reb are doing it acoustic on a Japanese show, and Reb kind of screws it up, and he looks at Darm like he's in trouble by his daddy. you gotta watch that video. You'll find it. Just Japanese TV, Gawking In My Dreams, and you'll see it. It's pretty classic.
There is some random show that like every hair model band went on and did acoustic, so I don't know what that show is, but I've seen a million and one of those videos.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the one. But I can't believe I just blanked on In My Dreams. That's one of my favorite Gawking songs. Bad Gawking fan, bad. So I screwed that one up, but anyway.
Yeah, you're gonna lose your Gawking stripes. Okay, number three.
Well, let me earn it back with Yngwie. Facing
yeah.
the All right. So the reason I got this one on there is because I love Mats Levin. Okay. I think that dude's voice is outstanding. And, you know, you got Swedish Erotica. You got him singing on the 1992 Treat album. For 90s stuff, Yngwie delivered big for me. And we've talked about this. You kind of re-engaged me in my Yngwie from 90 all the way through the late 90s. But it's all great material. I mean, his albums in those years are so killer. His singers are so killer that it's like a whole new chapter of my Yngwie world that I was just stuck in the 84 to 90 Yngwie days. And here I am in the 90s and I'm loving it. So I love the Facing the Animal song, Braveheart, My Resurrection, Another Time. The only complaint, again, the album cover. Dumb.
Oh,
like, I know he had some varying covers from what country it was released in, but damn, come on. This album cover sucks. Facing the Animal, I can think of something better right now.
Yeah, that is a piece of shit. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a piece of shit album cover. Because at that point, he was kind of like in his chunky phase. So you just got like a picture of his chunky face. It's like, what is this? I guess he's an animal. He eats like an animal. But I don't know. He eats a lot of animals. I don't know what his face does for the... Yeah, I mean, dude, like, you could have did something like Kiss Animal Eyes or something like the Animal Prince or I don't know, just anything. Anything could have been better than that. That's stupid.
Oh, yeah. That's like, you're teeing it up, Facing the Animal?
Yeah.
There's five things off the top of my head right now anything. I think that are better.
That's a stupid, yeah, so bad. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. But, and you know, and what pissed me off about that, I'm so glad you brought that up because the dude was back on Polygram. In 97, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's on a major label. So, like, okay, if you're on CMC, I hate to keep using the CMC reference. Okay, if you're on CMC and your pudgy face is on the cover, all right, I'm going to let it slide because CMC, their album covers all suck. But for Polygram and you got Cozy Powell and this great production and everything that you got going on and that's the piece of shit album cover you have? No, that's bad, man. That was stupid.
Yeah, dude. I agree. Come on.
That was bad. I forgot how bad that was. Okay. My number three. Now this is going to piss off some Kiss fans. And I put this album of Kiss over Psycho Circus. But I stand by it. I'm going to let my metal misfit colors shine here, but I'm going with Kiss, Carnival of Souls. So this is grunge Kiss. It's the thing that should not be. But let me tell you why it's okay with me. If you're a Kiss fan, and even Ryan, you know, you don't have to be a huge Kiss fan. Kiss follows trends. Right?
At least, I thought they said them.
Maybe it, when they started, they just were a straight up rock and roll band. But disco comes out. Kiss does a disco rock song.
That's right. Kiss does
pop. Kiss does heavy metal. Because 80s metal is the big thing. Kiss evolves. So Kiss, they had two options. Do a grunge album or put the makeup back on with the original guys. That was the only cards they had to play. They can't make a hair metal album in, you know, maybe it was 95 or 6 when they were working. Probably it was 95 when they were working on this. They knew that it wasn't going to fly. You know, things happened. The money started talking, and people got kicked out of Kiss, and the original guys came back. So the grunge album got shelved. And to some people, probably say, thankfully, I'm glad that happened. Now, crazy enough, I got the bootleg of this album. So this album,
really,
I don't know who did it. I don't know if Eric Singer was pissed off at the band and he put the bootleg out there, or somebody associated with the band. But when this album got shelved, a bootleg of it came out, and I had the bootleg. The crazy thing about the bootleg, though, is that it was missing the last three songs. And I think the last three songs are the coolest songs on there. It's I Confess, In the Mirror, and I Walk Alone. Those are really cool songs. But, you know, there's some cool, you know, there are some heavy elements that are reminiscent of Revenge on here. But for the most part, it's Kiss trying to be Alice in Chains. But I enjoy Hate. Hate is a very heavy song with Gene on it. You know, Master and the Slave is cool. Childhood's End is kind of more like an acoustical type thing. There's also an acoustic song called I Will Be There, which is Paul, you know, dedicated to his son. Very good song. The thing is about this album is it's not only is it obviously Kiss out of their element, but it's very underproduced. Now, was this done on purpose because they're trying to get the grunge sound? Maybe, like, once the brakes got put on, they never went back and put the finishing touches or tightened up the sound. So it's not a good sonically sounding album. But I kind of wish there was a what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, the album. I wish there was like a Carnival of Souls tour, and I wish there was videos for this. I kind of miss that, because with every band that we talk about, especially bands that we're big fans of, you kind of like to see what was the album art going to be like, which they've kind of showed. It's some head that was on fire or something like that. But once it got shelved, and then the bootleg came out, it's almost like they just puked the thing out during the Kiss reunion. It came out and it was called The Final Sessions. It's just a photo of them in the studio. So nothing about this is proper. They never did videos for it. The album art is really not the true album art. So, and we never got to see what a tour would look like. A tour probably would have had to have been done in theaters, and it probably would have been a very scaled back show. So kind of just something that can be left in our imaginations. But and here's the last thing I'll say. For years and years and years after Revenge, Kiss was promising like the cousin of Revenge, the evil stepbrother of Revenge. They kept talking about it, and this album was definitely not it. So I kind of long for that album that was the brother to Revenge, kind of the way like Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun go together. I kind of wanted Revenge and then like another album like Revenge. But instead, it was Carnival of Souls, and then even a worse offering, in my opinion, which was Psycho Circus. So after Revenge, a lot of people believe it's the fall off, and we never really got a really high-quality album after that. And I agree with that statement. So, yeah, that's my Kiss rant. I'm done.
So with it saying the final sessions, did they imply that it's the last one with Bruce Kulick? Because Eric Singer rejoined the band after when they regrouped with the original guys, but Bruce did not.
Right.
I'm a little confused in my history there. Is that what they were implying, that they knew that they were going to regroup with the original guys?
No. So the timeline is this album was probably recorded in 95-ish or so.
Okay.
Then the Kiss reunion happens in 96, and then this album comes out in 97. So I think when they call it the final sessions, they're trying to give you the implication is that this is just some unfinished crap that we're just going to put out there. So you're not supposed to get the vibe that this is a real album that will have a tour and videos. This is just like some shelved thing, and this is the final sessions. We never really finished it, but this is what we got to give you. That's what I think they were trying to say with it.
I see. A little bit of mystery involved there. Okay, yeah. That's making sense now.
Yeah, that's what I think they were going for. But, yeah, that's it, man. Grunge Kiss. I put Grunge Kiss over Psycho Circus, so that's what kind of weirdo I am. So, what's your...
No, you're good. Hey, you're a dedicated fan, man. Yeah. You got this.
Yeah. Number two.
Number two. All right. I dropped this one before. I think I talked about this guy, but this is Steelhouse Lane. Maybe that could... And I got their two of their albums because they're from 98 and 99. So they released two incredible albums. And when I say they, I mean Mike Slammer, the guy that recorded a lot of the Warrant guitars. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if it's Slammer or Slammer, but it's got one M. So however you want to pronounce it, Mike Slammer, his album, his band, Steelhouse Lane. So the first album is called Metallic Blue. The first two songs aren't even my favorite. They're the two, like, you know, quote-unquote best songs or singles off the album, but I actually like them the least. There's lots of ties to James Christian and Hardline. Epic music for such a random time to create such music, or this style of music, but got a song called Addicted, Dr. Love, which Hardline also recorded. And Best Years of My Life. Okay, so that's album number one. Album number two, Find What You're Looking For, Son of a Loaded Gun, Turn Around, Where Are You Now, and probably my favorite, and it's actually a band, a re-record from a band called Streets. It's called If Love Should Go. And if you look up that song, the Kansas singer actually sings that song because he was in the band Streets when Mike Slammer first recorded it. It's this amazing chorus, If Love Should Go. Check it out. It's by Streets. Hmm. It's another epic, it's just fantastic musicianship. The connection of song sharing on this these two albums, though, is interesting because you got Alias, House of Lords, James Christian, Hardline, and Steelhouse Lane all kind of sharing these songs that were released on their respective albums, whether it be demo albums, solo albums, early 90s albums. They kind of all shared these songs, but Mike Slammer is just a talented dude. He's a fantastic guitar player, and he recruited some great members to play with him. But if you were to take anything from my rant on Steelhouse Lane, check out their two albums from 98-99, and also check out the band Streets, If Love Should Go. It's also a bonus track on their second album, Slaves of the New World, from 99. So I highly suggest you check that out.
Cool. All right, man. Never heard of it? I'm getting educated tonight.
Nice.
All right. This is probably my only oddball album, but... seeing who it's coming from, nobody who knows me would be surprised at this. MVP, Mike Vassera Project, Windows.
Oh, nice, dude. I checked it out. When you told me about it a while ago, yes. I checked it out.
Love, love, love this album, man. This came out
album.
I think it came out in 97. And this album's now all over the place. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Spotify. But this is Mike doing his thing, man. I feel like he's free from no more ties to Yngwie, no more ties to Loudness. He's just kind of spreading his wings and doing his thing. Now there are some things that sound very familiar. There's a song called "Innocent Man" and "Say a Prayer." Strangely enough, Yngwie does the solo on "Say a Prayer." So those songs sound pretty familiar to what you're used to. Windows, the song, is very like psychedelic, almost Beatles-y, but it's really almost like progressive. It's really cool. I really dig that song. Then he does a song called "Crack the Sky," which is like got a real groove 90s metal type stuff, almost grungy, but but not, you know, but not grunge. Then there's a jazzy song called No More, and he's just got those, like, he's got the keys going really strong, and it's jazzy, super cool. Then he does a metal cover of Strawberry Fields, and it ain't like the Beatles. It's crunchy. It's almost like the way Motley did Helter Skelter, but he really cranks Strawberry Fields. So, and every song is good. This is one of those ones where you could just listen to the whole thing and enjoy it. It kind of, even though he's going all over the board, it all fits. It's kind of like the way Queen is. It's just little variations of what he does all throughout the album. And just the sound quality is so good, too. I recommend this album highly, obviously. I put it at number two. Big fan of this album. Big fan of Acera, and I think this is one of his shiny moments.
So Acera for you is like Gioli for me. Like right. Anything he touches,
he can do no wrong.
Yeah. It's like his vocals just resonate with us. But I listened to your interview with him way back, and I checked this out, and I really liked it. Everything you're saying, super crunchy, super killer. His covers are good. The guy's got such a great voice that he can't do any wrong, really. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought this one up, man. That's a random one, but it's one that I've definitely checked out, especially listening to your interview. So, cool. Good job.
All right, man. I can't wait to hear this. Is this going to be an unknown band, or is this going to be one of the classics that we're used to from you? I want to hear your number one. Number one.
Oh, dude. This one should be no surprise. Def Leppard Euphoria, 1999.
Oh, right. Yes. I should have seen that one coming.
Oh, man. They're back. The post-slang hangover, man. They're back. Just like the crew did with Swine, and then they made New Tattoo, which I love. You know, these guys stayed true to form. So they kicked it off with Demolition Man. Very inclusive track. A little bit of everything from Def Leppard, just kind of sprinkled in there. Promises. I know you love that song. It's vintage Def Leppard. You know what I got to say, though? The odd nut squeeze scream at the end of that song with no rasp in his voice. That's the only part of that song that's weird. Not agree? You remember that part?
Yeah.
He's it's got that real fake. High scream, and it's like Joe Elliott's got that just epic, raspy, all the time, kind of Brian Adams-ish, raspy voice. But he just like grabs his nuts, and there's no rasp to the scream at the end of the song. And it's probably a studio
trick or something, I bet.
I just don't like that. That's the only complaint, you know, and that's the part of the obviously I'm going kind of deep into this album because I'm taking that part out. But anyway, you got All Night, that's that R&B hip hop attempt, but the chorus is really good. Paper Sun, you said it earlier, it's a gem. That's like the classic of this album. I think it's a great song. It's my favorite song on the album, to be honest. To Be Alive, Guilty, Mid-Tempo, Gold.
Yep.
It's no Hysteria, but it's harking back to where they should be. And again, at the time I thought these guys are getting kind of up there in age, but just like the crew, you know, here we are in 2023, and they're playing together, and they're letting their gray hair fly, and it's totally fine. So I thought they were getting up there in age in 99, and here we are in 23, and it's all good. So I love this album. I still listen to it. I think it was a great product by them, and I'm proud of them for this album.
Yeah, I can't fault you on that one. I know you love Leppard, and even me, a non-Leppard fan, likes this album, so that's saying something.
Totally, absolutely.
Well, you just said an album that is going to be my number one. Generation Swine, number one.
So, oh my
and I ain't write a damn thing about it. I don't need notes or anything to talk about Generation Swine. I feel like I've talked about Generation Swine like a million times. What's this another one that just kind of comes up? I know it came up on an album that Let Us Down episode. It didn't let me down. It let somebody else. It didn't let me down. I liked it because for me, You know, sometimes, you know, man, I'm an oddball. Sometimes I go against the grain, and I think at this moment in the late 90s, I was kind of enjoying some of the electronic and industrial stuff that was coming out. So I like that, and I'm a big Crew fan, and all of a sudden Crew dabbles in this kind of stuff, and I'm like, wow, I'm eating it like I'm shoveling it in by the mouthful here. I'm loving it. But yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I get it. You know, if you go back and you read the stories, this was an album that was done with John Corabi, and they just replaced the vocals, whatever. You know, I get it. But I'm a big Vince fan. You and I have talked about this numerous times. Whatever, I like Carved in Stone, man. I'm just weird. I'm an idiot. I'm a freak. I don't have to tell you. I like that album. I like Motley 94. I like this album. I pretty much, whatever Motley does, it's kind of the same as Kiss, man. I'm going to pretty much be down with almost everything they do. And, you know, Afraid. Let's talk about Afraid. Great song. What a cool, like, poppy, metal, alterna type of a track. I think it's great. And, you know, for a while they were still playing it at their shows. I don't think they play it anymore.
I actually do like that song.
Yeah, Afraid.
I'll be honest.
Very
I'll
cool
admit
song.
It.
I love the song Rat Like Me. I think that's a great song. It's got that attitude. Generation Swine probably should have been a single, the song, because that really does sound like typical Motley Crue. What's the one? It sounds like Pantera. That's my only gripe, is that they don't know who they are anymore. Like, some stuff sounds like Motley Crue. Then Let Us Pray sounds like Pantera, and then Confession sounds like Stone Temple Pilots. So they're kind of going all over the board and just throwing shit up against the wall and see if it'll stick. But it was, I think the main thing was, and I was just talking about this on the episode we did with the concerts that we went to, and I went to the listening party of this album. It was the day before the release. So, like, I think back of that. I think about buying the album the next day. I remember they were on Regis and Letterman. So it was, and like my boy Vince is back in the band. So I think when you put the whole thing together, like, it, for me, it was just a cool time. My band was doing its thing. They were dabbling and trying some different stuff. Some of it works on there. Some of it doesn't. Even Glitter, man. I think Glitter is a cool ballad. I enjoy it. I just dig the album. Like I said, a couple songs maybe not super into, but for the most part, I can listen to this and enjoy it, and it just reminds me of a cool era and a good time. So that's my number one.
It's crazy because when I first got into Motley, I was 10 years late in the game. I was buying Metal Edge magazines, and they were all over the cover again. Yep. And I was thinking, all right, well, you know, I'm glad I got into Motley at this era. And I think it was 96 probably that I really first started paying attention to Motley. I knew of them obviously, but I never really dealt too hard. I tried this, I bought this, I think when it came out, so I added to the gold status of this album. But that might be the last time I listened to it.
Wow.
I don't know, dude. To me, it's just like 94 Motley. I know it's good music. I know it's hard rock music. I love Vince Neil. I love John Corabi and the Scream. I love Vince Neil at all times. But this one was just too out there for me. And it harks back to that, like, I get that you have to be creative. You have to keep expanding as an artist in any given band. This, to me, is the completely insulting the old fans that falls into that category. And that's probably harkening back to my AC/DC love, which every album is the same album.
Right.
Therefore, I love it because it's predictable. This was their slang, and I'll never get over it. I've tried it. I've tried 94. I've tried it so many times, but I'm never going to get it. You know what I mean? Like, everybody else does. I think it's cool. I love Vince, but I can't do it. I'll never do it. I don't get it. I don't know. It's just it just doesn't jive with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a Tommy influence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I do like Afraid. I think Afraid's a really cool song.
Yep. No, I understand, man. It's not for everybody. I'll be honest. I didn't have many honorable mentions. The only one that I was kind of toying with was Jugulator by Priest. I really...
Dude, I have it.
Do you?
Yep,
it's your, yeah, I really like that album. I like Tim Ripper Owens on there, and I like the heaviness. The thing that's lacking for me on that is the songwriting. and the lyrics especially. I think the lyrics are just bad. I'm sorry. I don't care for the lyrics on this album. So the lyrically and like it doesn't really have the hooks. Even when Priest is heavy, man, Rob Halford keeps it together with cool lyrics and good hooks. You know, Painkiller is a prime example of that. And I think that's, you know, you can bring in the heaviness and you can bring in a great vocalist, but what's missing for me without Halford is the songwriting. A big piece of the songwriting's gone, and it shows. So,
yeah, I had that too, actually. I had it in the list, and I kicked it out for one of the random albums, but this was my... the song Bullet Train, I actually as they were giving it away as a free single, and it was a cassette tape. It was just remember those little paper sleeves for the singles they used to kind of like promote? Yeah, one of those. And I thought that was a really cool song, and I actually think it's still one of my favorite songs on that album. And it was my first introduction to Ripper Owens, and I really liked it. It's a lot more aggressive than Painkiller in like a more pissed 90s style. And I really like the live stuff from this album from this tour, I should say, because like obviously he was doing a Priest cover band and he did the Rockstar movie YouTube thing, which is loosely based on, but his voice is so solid, dude. Like it's the bit of the classic Priest sound. And I do like his two albums, but it's like it's just a bummer that these are like such hard to find albums streaming and whatnot. It's kind of like blocked from all that. But yeah, it was definitely an honorable mention for me as well.
Metal Meltdown 98. I love that. I actually really enjoy his renditions of the Halford stuff. It's really really good, man. I love it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What anything else stand out from that missed the list?
Yeah, well, I had Doc and I had this one, and then I had that band Frontline. I threw out Frontline in the 94 category. Yep. That was their first album. This one's called Heroes. It's just right on par with their first album. Check it out, Frontline. Very 80s, big. It's a German band. He kind of like delves into the more Steve Perry realm on this album, which I don't love, but it's still killer. I would suggest checking it out. Yeah, they're just keeping it real in 97 with their album called Heroes. So those are my three honorable mentions. I actually just had two that I kicked off the list, Priest and Dokken, and then Frontline. That's it.
All right, man. Well, hey, we got it done. We got through the 90s, and now we can move on with our lives.
Oh, thank God. I actually love these albums, though, dude. Like, all these albums we talked about, like, I still... Like in the last episode, Out of My Head, Slaughter, dude.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, keep cranking that album, and then this you got Euphoria, you got the Unruly Child stuff. Like, check it out, and then the mystery stuff. You gave me some Iced Earth stuff. Like, it's all good, man. These guys never stop delivering.
Very good, brother. Well, always a pleasure, and I know we'll be talking again soon about this stuff. So have a good one.
All right, thanks, dude.
Later, man. Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, that was great going back to 97 through 99. Hope you enjoyed it. Rock on!